So the fire squad is back.
All right.
That's bad.
Someone else's joke that I stole.
Okay. So back to talking about liabilities and equity. We only have one main paper for this meeting. The cover paper has some background information. It summarizes the discussions we had with ASAF, which we conveyed to you orally at the last meeting, but we just put it there just so you can have as a reference. It also includes a summary of next steps. The main paper that we want to discuss with you at this meeting is Agenda Paper 5A. Now, at last month's meeting, we set out the challenges of all the problems with, or challenges with distinguishing between financial instruments with characteristics of equity, those financial liabilities and equity instruments, and how we intend to address those challenges. In particular, we said that we need to identify the underlying rationale of the distinction, and we also need to identify other ways of distinguishing between claims within liabilities and within equity that might provide useful information. As we said at that time, our first step is to try and identify those features that are relevant. We do that in Agenda Paper 5A, so this is that first step. And in future sessions, we intend to look at which features might be relevant from the perspective of, for instance, the financial position of the entity, so the balance sheet, performance reporting, so P&L, etc., and those features that might be relevant for any disclosure. So that's going to come in future sessions. In Agenda Paper 5A, we're asking for your views on whether we have identified those relevant features and whether we have described them appropriately. Now remember, this will form the foundation for future discussions that we'll have in future board sessions. In paragraphs 11 to 16, we briefly describe claims against the entity, the features of those claims, and what makes information about a particular feature relevant to users. Now, in paragraph 16, we summarize that by saying that we consider a feature to be relevant if it potentially affects the prospects for future cash flows. Next, in paragraphs 17 to 22, we set out how information about relevant features is provided in financial statements. And in particular here, we note that in order to provide information about a feature, we need to quantitative information, we need to measure it in some way. Almost counteracting that, we also identify that there is a constraint that we have with financial statements, which is as a consequence of partial recognition and mixed measurement, there must be at least one claim that will be measured as a residual. Hence, we are looking at those features which are relevant that affect future cash flows, but those ones that we also would want to measure in some way. So those for which a residual measurement would kind of be insufficient. So for instance, all else being equal, given a particular feature, would we want to measure one claim and not the other? That kind of thing. There may be other features that may be relevant for other reasons, but they're not the focus at this time, so we're really trying to focus on those particular features. In paragraphs 23 to 67, we set out those features that we have identified as being relevant and for which, you know, measurement of that feature would provide useful information. And those features that we identified include whether the claim specifies the type of economic resource, the timing of settlements, the amount of economic resources required to settle the claim, and the priority of the claim on liquidation. We also touch on conditions and contingencies, but we want to cover that in a lot more detail when we come to derivatives, not only for derivatives, but for some other types of claims, but we'll get to that in due course. another point is that when we were going through and identifying these features, our starting point was the requirements of IS 32, the conceptual framework, and we have dipped into some other standards where relevant, such as IFRS 2 and IS 33 for bits and pieces, just to identify what we think is relevant under existing IFRSs. For each of these features, we have described the feature, set out why it is relevant, including its potential effect on future cash flows, and where it, and we sort of identified where it pops up under the existing literature, so you have an idea of where it kind of fits in. We also discussed other matters that we did consider, but we did not think of features that are relevant in the sense that we've described in this paper, including things such as voting rights. So, for example, while voting rights attaching to particular claims might be relevant and might be useful information for a user to understand who holds those voting rights, all else being equal between two claims, would we want to, for instance, measure one claim with voting rights differently to a claim without those voting rights? So these are the types of distinctions that we're trying to identify. Finally, in paragraph 68 to 85, we illustrate how we would use these types of features to analyze some simple instruments, just to give you an idea of how we're thinking about these features in terms of and the distinctions we're trying to make between these claims based on these features. Does anyone have any questions or comments before we turn to the questions to the board?
Mary?
Manuel, let me check two things. One is, I think, generic. I noticed that in your comments, you're saying let's think about features and what their measurement impact is. And, you know, we're skipping right to measurement instead of saying classification and measurement, because my sense is we're trying to say let's pause having the current hardwired classification and measurement. Not that we're going to throw it all up in the air, but let's think about the measurement we want. And in thinking about that measurement, I want to confirm that when you say measurement, you're thinking primarily about direct measurement of the claim as opposed to reallocation.
Yep.
You know, showing the flows or the distributions between different claims that don't change the total amount of claim on the entity. So when you say measurement, you're thinking about changing the total amount of claim on the entity.
Yeah, so when I'm talking about measurement, I am thinking about whether we would require some type of measurement. I'm not talking about the measurement bases, etc., for instance, but I am talking about a direct measurement versus residual allocation type of thing.
And then one other question. Paragraph 49A, you're talking here about obligations to transfer a variable number of equity instruments, you know, making the point that they're a liability today under 32, although the conceptual framework would, I think, say because owned shares are not a resource, they're not a liability. So I wanted to ask why you were thinking about this variable number of shares is here, you know, in this section. Is it just because it's an IS 32 legacy? Because the owned shares that you're using to settle it are not the entity's resources.
Yeah, I think the point, this is falling under the feature that I talk, where I talk about the amount or the quantity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so, for instance, for this type of claim, it specifies the amount. So the amount is not linked to, for instance, the entity's own shares. It's some kind of independent value. And information about that specified amount is relevant to users, and we want to measure that and show the effect. At the moment, we're doing it through the liability classification. It gets classified as a liability and it gets measured, but the point I was trying to make here is that we do think it's relevant enough to measure it and to present that measurement to users.
Because it's denominated as an amount.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Steve.
Paragraph 25B, discuss how the feature might affect the prospects of future cash flows. whose cash flows? Is it the instrument's cash flows or the cash flows for other claim holders?
Well, it's going to be the entity's cash flows, and so if it's the entity's cash flows, it's going to be how they're all going to be similar, because, for instance, if you change the cash flows to one claim, there's going to be some other claim that's going to be affected as well. So there's going to be those dependencies between the claims. But it is ultimately the entity's cash flows. But then again, in the end, users are trying to assess the cash flows to them. And that might be primarily from the entity. The claims against an entity, the value of those claims are going to be derived from the potential of cash flows from the entity.
Does it matter, should one also, maybe part of what you've done, but whether one claim is risk enhancing or risk absorbing for another claim? So if the payments I make to one claim are positively correlated or negatively correlated with the cash flows of the entity, affects the risk position and the cash flows to the claim next in line.
Yeah.
Is that captured?
There are two elements to that. I think I would analyze that in sort of two ways, because in one sense, in order to get some kind of correlation or something, then there would need to be, for instance, some kind of amount specified for that claim. And so it might be, for instance, specified by reference to some index or some other underlying asset which gives it that correlation. But the other feature that kind of distributes risk amongst claims is the priority. And so the priority of the claim at liquidation will distribute risks, which is the kind of the waterfall or the pecking order.
But that's
slightly different, because I think you're talking about risks or some type of effect where you reference something like a hedging, like a natural hedge, where you specify the amount of economic resources that the claim would be potentially settled by, and that might offset some other risk in the entity.
Yeah, so I might have a bond, it could pay just a fixed amount.
Yeah.
It could pay an amount that increases in line with the business doing better. So it could be linked to some factor which is correlated with the entity's performance. Or it could have negative correlation, because it could be linked to a factor which is associated with poorer performance for the entity. And you've got the same priority, because you have to pay this before you get to the next claim in line. But the nature of the claim is going to have a very different impact on the people who are next in line.
Yes, yeah. And I think there might be two different matters, because, for instance, you might be specifying the amount of the claim by something that at the moment correlates, for instance, with the economic resources of the entity or its operations. But because it's specified by that reference, if the entity changes its economic resources or its operations, then it loses that correlation, or that the risk kind of offsetting disappears. And so providing information about the amount is going to be relevant to users, because putting that together with the entity's operation will let them assess what the net risk is, or the residual risk is, to, for instance, a lower priority claim, if that makes sense. And this would be quite different to, for instance, an ordinary share, which by definition would transmit whatever economic resource or whatever risks of the entity with its economic resources or perhaps higher ranking claims, all of that would be transmitted automatically through to the ordinary shareholder. So that would be quite different.
I can understand that we will want to focus first on the claims on the entity in terms of what drain it has, or what effect it has on the resources of the entity as a net, in a way, and if one claim increases in value for one claim holder to the detriment of another claim holder, we might say the net impact on the entity is nil, so I don't take this into account. And this is the entity view, entity perspective, in a way. Now, should we stop there and not go a bit further and consider that there is also for the holders of those claims, who are stakeholders to the entity, could be creditors, could be equity owners of different classes, also a need for information about this effect of dilution versus relution of their own rights. Although the net effect on the entity might be nil, but the transfer of value between two classes of claim holders is something that probably is worth of interest in terms of information, because those instruments could be traded on the market. So I think they have some rights attached to it, which probably require some. So is it in the framework of the general purpose financial reporting? Yes, I think, because it is instruments that give a claim on the entity. It's not special purpose reports. So I think we have to consider also the effect of dilution, relution in terms of what information needs about those things.
Yeah, I think definitely. I think I am trying to capture those effects as well, because when I talk about potential cash flows, I'm not only talking about the requirement to pay cash, I'm talking about potential cash flows that will arise when you're settling the claim.
But you answered to Steve's question, which cash flows, and you said the entity's cash flows.
Yes. Yeah.
So is it on a gross basis, or is it in a way in a net, disregarding to who it is paid? The same amount will go out, and I don't care whether it is A or B. But well, I think whether it is A or B is important to A and B.
Well, I guess it's important to the entity as well, because when you're issuing different types of claims or buying back different types of claims, you're going to those types of features will determine how much you're going to be getting for issuing them and for buying them back, for instance.
Exactly.
And this is what I'm trying to capture. But what I was just simply trying to say, and let me clarify, is that for every kind of potential cash flow to the holder, there's going to be a reciprocal one for the entity. And so the entities, for instance, in those situations, it would be paying a different amount to settle one claim than for the other. Apart from the fact that whether the claim requires settlement before liquidation or anything like that, but there is a differential in the feature set, which means that there's different potential cash flows. Any other questions before we
move on?
So just the two questions we'd like to ask you, the set of questions we like to ask you is, you already gave us some comments about how we've described the features we have identified. Were there any other comments about these features that we've got in the papers about how we've described them?
I had one more, and I think it goes to the point that Philippe was just raising. If you look at 59C, it's under the heading features that we think are do not think are relevant, and that's the perspective of financial reporting. And I'm raising that because I think this issue about changes the amount of claims on the entity, and you know, we're suggesting that those are the features for which we want direct measurement of the claim. You know, that's the underlying theme here, versus features that may affect how you reallocate the residual between claim holders, I think might be related to, and I just want to encourage us, you know, the staff to explore the perspective of the entity, because I think if you take the entity perspective, you know, whether or not my claim is indexed to something internal or external, you know, if the price of gold goes up, the amount you owe me changes, that changes the claim. But if it's a feature that says, as the entity, I don't have to pay out any more or any less, but it might shift how much Philippe gets versus I get as holders of different perspective. I think that's when you're layering on a piece of the proprietary perspective, because it's saying, I want the financial statements to tell me about the total demands on the entity, and then I want you to tell them about how they go to the different ones of us. So I don't think it's going all the way to the proprietary perspective, but I think it's taking a step in that direction. And so I'm not sure I agree with 59C, that the perspective of the reporting, of financial reporting, is irrelevant.
Well, I guess the point that I'm trying to make just in this paper is we're not talking about exactly where the distinction is going to end up. We're just saying which features are relevant. And I don't think, for instance, the perspective of financial reporting would say, for instance, that we don't want to give information about these differences. We want to give information about these differences because they're relevant to users and it's going to affect their cash flows.
Okay, so let me try saying it a different way, which is that if we're trying to identify those features that trigger direct measurement of a claim, it's because those features affect the amount of claims on the entity, and therefore it kind of is an entity perspective in terms of the boundaries of direct measurement. So I think that is, to me, that's saying the perspective is relevant to making that decision because it tells us where we cut off.
But that's more the boundaries of the entity, I guess.
So the entity determines when we stop direct measurement. Yep. And then separately, I agree that we should explore this additional information about priorities of distributions between allocations between shareholders. But I agree that that's not the subject of this paper, which is what things deserve direct measurement.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess later on, for instance, for some of these ones that we've said aren't relevant at this stage, we might want to think about what we want to achieve with the statement of financial position, the statement of financial performance, how we want to convey this information. Mm-hmm. Some of these might color that. For instance, risk, what we want to achieve with P&L, et cetera. Yeah.
In other words, could we say the unit of account we are looking at is one class of claims, not two or three at the same time that could offset each other. We go to the gross, not to the net, in terms of looking at the effect on the entity.
In terms of looking at the effect of the entity, I think we're looking at, for instance, if two claims have different feature sets, then they're two different claims.
Yes, and we measure each of them separately.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's good to say.
Okay. Were there any other features that you think would be relevant that we haven't captured in this paper? Do you think any of the features that we have identified are not relevant?
They're all relevant.
Yeah.
No? Yeah. Okay.
Manuel, one observation. In the type, you refer to cash, financial asset, goods, service, economic resource. And then
paragraph.
$29. Right. And then amount, you refer to the various kinds of amounts. I was thinking about whether or not the type is fixed or not fixed. In other words, it's effectively contractual or not contractual. It could be contractual, but it may not be fixed, I guess is the point. So is that picked up in amount or is that picked up in type?
If you're talking about the quantity of, for instance, cash or the quantity of
I'm not talking about
goods
that.
Or services.
I'm talking about take a bond.
Yeah.
The interest rate is fixed.
Yeah, yeah.
Preferred stock,
the
dividend may not be fixed.
Yeah.
Where is that covered, that distinction?
In the amount.
The feature.
Yeah. In the amount.
In the amount.
Yeah. When I talk about the amount, I talk about, for instance, face values, coupons, but I also talk about rates of changes in those amounts, and if you specify them by reference to interest rates, some other, or changes in some underlying, because the amount is really what specifies how much you're going to be transferring.
But I didn't see whether or not it was fixed or not, or variable, if you will. In other words, discretion or no discretion. I didn't see that feature.
It's different. You say discretion or variable.
Yeah.
Discretion.
Yeah. So you could have, for instance, if you don't have the choice, you're given a face value or a rate of change or something like that. Users are going to be interested to know what that face value is, what those coupons amount. We might want to measure that in some way. But for instance, if such as an ordinary share, the amount is discretionary, and ultimately how much you're going to pay out at liquidation is based on your residual assets, then you don't need any information, any additional information. All the information you need is information about your assets and about higher priority claims in order to work that out. There's nothing within the claim itself that specifies something that would make it any different, if that makes sense.
So that's the kind
of distinction.
It's just that I didn't see that feature wasn't kind of leaping out at me. The whether or not the nature of, for example, an interest rate was...
What I could potentially do is, when I talk about these or when I set them out in future, I could set them out, that kind of distinction, make that a bit more a bit more prominent, if that makes sense.
Because we do that with respect to the principle. We say whether or not something has to be settled or doesn't have to be settled.
Yeah.
But with respect to the time value component, we weren't as specific.
Yeah, I can do that. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.